7:04 on a Tuesday. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Halford Bruff, Sportsnet 650. Halford and Bruff of the Morning is brought to you by the Dallari family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dallari difference today by visiting your nearest Dallari dealer today. Hour one of the program is in the books. Download it now if you want to hear a terrific segment with Justin Bourne, Fan 590, Sportsnet NHL analyst. Apple, Google, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, hour one is available. Hour two might be even better. Don't tell Bourne. AJ Haefeli is going to join us in a moment to talk all things Colorado Avalanche. Then at 7:30, Vancouver sports talk legend Dan Russell, author of the new memoir, Pleasant Good Evening, will be joining us as he continues his book tour. I should let you know that hour two of this program is brought to you by North Star Metal Recycling. I'm working on a catchphrase like World Star for North Star. I'm workshopping it. I'm not going to do it live on the air, but I'll workshop it and get it back to you guys on that one. North Star Metal Recycling, Vancouver's premier metal recycler. They pay the highest prices on scrap metal. North Star Metal Recycling, they recycle, you get paid. Visit them at 1170 Powell Street in Vancouver. We are also brought to you by the Dallari family of Acura dealers. Three dealerships to serve you better: North Shore Acura, Acura of Langley, and Burrard Acura on Terminal Avenue. To the phone lines we go. Joined by our next guest as we dive into the Colorado Avalanche St. Louis Blues series, which begins tonight. AJ Haefeli here on the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. Good morning, AJ. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
We're good, thanks. And thanks for taking the time to do this. I want to start with the pressure that's facing this Colorado Avalanche team, because this has been the hill that they haven't been able to get over in recent years, the second round. The second round is to them what the Toronto Maple Leafs had in the first round. Has that been a major narrative going into this for the Colorado Avalanche and their players?
Yeah, I think everybody around the Avalanche is a little tired of hearing about it, but the way that you make that go away is by winning hockey games. So yeah, I would say it's fair that it's a narrative that surrounds the club.
This matchup in particular, a really interesting one, because the St. Louis Blues were the team that got swept by the Colorado Avalanche last year. I don't want to call it an embarrassment for the Blues, but it certainly wasn't a good showing by them. Kind of come back this year. They look like a somewhat different team. How much of last year's sweep is being talked about as this series prepares to go tonight, game one in Colorado?
Not very much, honestly. I think everybody understands it was a weird year last year. The Blues weren't really up to the level that you would expect, given their performance in recent years. And to be honest, like there were enough changes between the two teams that it's not really a relevant data point anymore. So it hasn't really been a driving factor in the conversation so far. Everybody kind of gets that. Both teams have done a lot of work in changing, you know, a little bit of who they are since then.
So obviously the Colorado Avalanche as a team are pretty compelling in that they're the Stanley Cup favorites right now, according to most sports books. But for me, honestly, I tune in to watch Cale Makar when I'm watching the Colorado Avalanche. And I'm just wondering what it's like to cover this guy on a daily basis, to watch his games on a daily basis. Because for me, Cale Makar has reached Connor McDavid levels in terms of like me marveling at his plays on a regular basis.
No, I think it's, I think that aspect of it is very similar for us. And getting to watch it every day is a genuine, it's a pleasure. And we're very fortunate in Colorado to get to watch that kind of talent up close on a regular basis. You know, every team that goes through a rebuilding phase, the draft is the great hope, right? And boy, did they ever get it right in 2017 with that kid. He is not only is he genuinely breathtaking at times on the ice, but he's really humble off it. And He's just a special talent, a special human being, and Colorado's very, very fortunate to have him. And for him to be as good as he is at the age that he is genuinely remarkable.
When the Avs were really, really struggling, And I think they were honestly one of the worst teams I've ever seen, especially during the salary cap era. Maybe it was that 2016-17 season when they went 22-56-2 for like 48 points. They were just they were a horrible, horrible team. It was the first season that Jared Bednar was behind the bench. Did you imagine that they could rebuild their blue line as quickly and as well as they did?
No, not at all. I mean, again, the draft is the great hope, right? At the time, they still had Matt Duchene, and Devon Taves hadn't even broken into the NHL yet, even though he was in his mid-20s, early 20s, you know? Like, it, at the time, this what became Colorado's foundation on defense, you know, that the Duchene trade gave them Bowen Byram and Sam Girard, and they drafted Cale Makar and then traded for Devon Taves. Eric Johnson's still there. That's five of the six guys that are going to be playing tonight in game one. So I think the way that they did it, as quickly as they did it, they got lucky along the way. They did some great work. They did some great scouting. They've done some great development. It's been remarkable, but also it's amazing what happens when you invest in the position. They didn't really invest on defense for a really long time, and they didn't use very many first round picks on it, and it wasn't very good. And then they started investing a lot of resources into it, and it's arguably the real strength of the team at this point.
How important is it that the Avs get it done this year, especially? They've got some pending UFAs, and obviously Nazem Kadri, but Burakovsky as well, Nichushkin, who's been really good for them, and also the goaltender, Darcy Kuemper.
Yeah, I think it's really easy to look at all the expiring guys and see the potential for change, and you know how the cycle goes. If you just only get so many shots at it, and you never know when your window's going to be open and when it's going to slam shut, and you know it's always very unpredictable. So you have to take the opportunities in front of you in life, and every time that you miss out on that opportunity, you don't get it back. You know, just we talk about the windows and, oh, like they've got five or six tries at this or whatever. And you never know how many that's actually going to be. The Washingtons and the Pittsburghs are kind of the freaks of nature, where they draft a guy and they build around him and they're there for 10 years. So you hope that that's the case in Colorado with MacKinnon and Makar. Like, that's certainly their goal, but you just never know when things are going to go sideways on you. And you look back and say, oh my gosh, I can't believe they didn't do more with that group. I mean, look at Winnipeg as a great example of how quickly things can go sideways on an organization, where they go from a conference final to who even are they anymore. So the pressure is very real for them to get this done now. This is a really good group. They just had the best regular season in franchise history. They're very, very good at all three levels. They're very well-rounded. They've got high-end skill. They've got physicality. They can do everything. The West is really, really weak this year. If you can't do it now in this situation, then when will you?
AJ, before we let you go, quick status update. We just mentioned Darcy Kuemper very quickly here. Obviously suffered the eye injury in the round one sweep over the Preds. Is he good to go tonight against the Blues?
Yeah, Kemper's fine.
Excellent. AJ, thanks a lot for doing this today, man. We really appreciate it. Enjoy this series. It should be a good one. We'll talk soon.
All right. You guys enjoy.
Thanks. Have a good one. That's AJ Haefeli from DNVR Avalanche here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
So I think he makes a really good point about the Avs need to get it done this season, because it's easy to say, well, even if they don't, they've still got Rantanen and Landeskog and MacKinnon and Makar. Those guys are locked up long term. And that's a great core. But as we've seen time and time again in the NHL, getting that core together is the first step. Mm-hmm. The second step, which is equally as difficult as finding that core, is filling it out with the right pieces and having it all come together at the same time. So when you've got very big contributors like Kadri and Burakovsky and Nichushkin,
yep,
you need to get it done.
If this was a different
because market- if they lose those guys, the Avs are still a good team, just like the Jets were still had that great core after they lost, say, Dustin Byfuglien. But they weren't the same team.
If this was a different team in a different market with the same situation at play, you wouldn't have quite the apoplectic fear of losing that they had in Toronto not getting out of the first round, but it would be very close. And, you know, I asked AJ right off the bat how much of a talking point is it when he said it wasn't really. That more speaks about the situation in Colorado than anything, because the second round is their bugaboo right now. They can't get out of it. So consider this. 2019, go to the second round against the San Jose Sharks, lose. 2020, in the bubble, second round, Dallas Stars, lose. Last year, and they looked like they were ready to make that jump because they got up 2-0 on the Vegas Golden Knights. And they did it in pretty dominant fashion. They outscored the Knights 10-3 over the first two games. And then what happened? Straight collapse, out again in the second round. So this is the point.
Which led to the Nathan MacKinnon quote about, I've been in this league for whatever years, and I haven't won. You know what?
If you had taken, put this Colorado team here in Vancouver, that MacKinnon quote would have been played over and over and over again, and all the little vignettes that we do on radio and television would have been, hey, this is it. This is where this team rubber meets the road. Because, again, if you look at it and take a step back, they've got a golden opportunity to get to a conference final. All due respect to the St. Louis Blues, it's the same St. Louis Blues team that they blew the doors off last year. Now, yes, you're going to get some revenge factor. And, yes, the Blues are a different team than the one that got annihilated. But if you get a chance, after having swept your way through the first round, to play a team that you previously swept in the second round, you've got to love your chances to get through.
The Nathan MacKinnon contract situation is kind of looming as well. He's in the same contractual situation as Horvat and JT Miller in that he has 1 year left, and then he's UFA.
Yeah, here's the Colorado Avalanche are going to fall into a situation that a lot of elite teams are going to fall into over the next couple of years, is the tough decisions are going to have to be made because it's a flat cap league, and we've seen it in Tampa Bay, and we've seen it everywhere else. Good players have to go sometimes because you just can't afford all of them. For example, Nazem Kadri.
He might have to go.
Probably his last kick at the can in Colorado. And it's unfortunate, but it's also the reality of the situation is that really good teams do tend to get punished in this league. It's a totally different example, but the Minnesota Wild. They're probably going to have to move Kevin Fiala, who had 85 points for them this year.
Or Dumba.
Either one, that's a huge contributor to a team that has Stanley Cup aspirations now.
Mm-hmm.
The Colorado Avalanche have Stanley Cup aspirations now, and they're facing an offseason where they're probably going to lose a very integral part of their team. The Tampa Bay Lightning traded JT Miller and then went on to win Stanley Cups. I mean, we're talking about the unfortunate reality of being a really good team, which is why these narratives get built up that you have to do something now. The pressure to win is now. It's why what's going on in Toronto is so hilarious to me, because some people are, I guess, quite rightly trying to make the argument that, there's always next year and we'll get it done next year. Because it's a driving force against the other people that are saying, this can't keep happening. You can't run it back again. The only thing that Toronto has right now is a reputation of losing in the first round. That is their identity as a team right now.
Mm-hmm.
There's no other identity about the Leafs other than you can't win in the first round. And I think a bit of it goes maybe even beyond the players and management that there's a curse or a jinx. But the reality of it is this. The Leafs can't win a first-round playoff series. And until that changes, that's going to be their reputation.
Is Colorado the clear Stanley Cup favorite right now?
No, because I think, as I mentioned
earlier.
Who
would you put second?
Florida.
I know they won the President's Trophy.
Who are you terrified of if you're in the East right now?
Well, Tampa Bay.
But they come in.
They're pretty good. They've won 2 Stanley Cups, and they know how to win.
Current context, though. Long, grueling series against the Leafs. Skin of their teeth. Maybe no Braden Point.
True. Yeah.
That's a huge loss.
I'm not scared of the Rangers.
No. And Carolina, I mean, is in prove-it territory too, right?
Okay, but I picked Carolina to win the Stanley Cup for a reason. That team has it all. They just don't get a lot of attention.
So right now,
they're so good defensively.
Would you, if you were to wager, would you put Florida behind Carolina?
I would.
Yeah, okay.
I would, but I understand why people would have Florida number two. It's tough to power rank the teams. It really is. Like, of the eight remaining teams, it is pretty tough because I would put Colorado first, and I'm very confident about that.
Okay.
And I would put the Rangers last. I would put them eighth.
Okay.
And then in the middle, there's great debates to be had.
Yeah. I mean,
like, I don't know. Like, where would you put St. Louis?
Because of the matchup, I'd put them low. I'd probably put them seventh. To be honest.
Right.
I think that, don't
get
me wrong.
A lot of people would have the Oilers seventh.
I think they've got a puncher's chance in this, maybe even more so, because there's a few different factors at play. And one of them is they obviously have a bad taste in their mouth from last year. So I think they can make it tight and they can make it competitive. But Colorado is still the favorite in that series.
For sure.
Yeah. I find the Battle of Alberta to be more open than a lot of people are saying right now. I think that the Tanev injury is massive for Calgary. Because I think if there's one Achilles heel for Calgary going into that series, it's going to be the blue line if Tanev's not there. Because that blue line all of a sudden becomes real slow. Michael, not that Tanev could move. But.
Michael Stone would replace Chris Tanev, and then you've got that bottom pair of Zadorov and Gabranson, who I think are a good pair as a bottom pair.
Yep.
But yeah, you don't want Gabranson and Zadorov out against McDavid.
So I would put going working in the reverse here. Yeah, I'm with you. The Rangers would be eight on the power rankings. I would probably put St. Louis as a seven. I'd probably put Edmonton as the six. And then you kind of start working your way up. Again, it would not surprise me right now if we have a Colorado-Calgary, Florida-Carolina Final Four.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's what the odds makers are kind of looking at right now, too. But
you kind of want Colorado-Edmonton, though? Wouldn't you want exciting players like Cale Makar and Connor McDavid
I think,
to face off?
I think the McKinnon v. McDavid thing would be terrific, right? I think that would be great. Don't get me wrong, Makar too, but you're just talking about the two guys that play center that are the frontline players. I think that would be a more entertaining series than Colorado-Calgary, but I think that one, the Colorado-Calgary might be more competitive, if that makes any sense whatsoever.
Oh, for sure. I think Calgary would have a better chance of beating Colorado because they can snuff out teams.
Yeah.
I don't think the Oilers can do that.
Yeah. By the way, before we go to break, we got to mention that you can bet on hockey like never before with Play Now Sports, your local BC sportsbook. So as we power ranked all of these eight remaining teams in the NHL Stanley Cup playoffs, we should look at some of the lines for tonight. So the President's Trophy winning Florida Panthers will host the first game of the Battle of Florida tonight. They are at 180, 160. My eyes are going. I'm getting old. Florida at 160, Tampa Bay at 240. In the nightcap, not surprisingly, the St. Louis Blues are the biggest underdog on the board tonight at 280. The Colorado Avalanche at 145 as the Avs open up their series at home at Ball Arena in Denver.
I don't like saying Ball Arena.
I usually don't. Where's the Pepsi Center? What was it before that?
I can't remember.
Was it like the McMichaels Center or something
Nichols.
Like that? The Nichols Center?
Is McNichols,
that McNichols
Arena.
Center.
No, that was the
old other
arena, the McNichols Arena.
That's what I'm talking about. That was pre-Pepsi Center, right? Yeah.
Right.
I like the old,
asking?
The old rant. Yeah, no, you
oh,
got
I thought,
it right.
I, no, I thought he was talking about, like, you know how buildings go under, you know, six different name changes? Like, what was Boston's? Boston's used to be something like the Fleet Center.
Yes.
Yep.
But I think it's changed names a few times.
It's now TD.
Yeah.
Was there one in between Fleet and TD?
I thought there might have been.
I hate. By the way, how much longer is the Staples Center going to be crypto.com? Is that like got like a year left? That's going to be when. Remember when the Houston Astros played at Enron Field?
Yeah.
That didn't last too long. Mm-hmm. I give crypto.com maybe one more year before they're back to Staples.
We should make an assignment for the listeners. If any of the listeners are bored at work, and you have access to the Google machine, or maybe Dom, find out the arena that's had the most corporate name changes.
Oh, that's great.
Well, here's a good start.
Okay.
So here's the official list for the Boston Arena.
Okay.
It opened as the Shawmut Center.
The what?
Shawmut.
Shawmut.
The location of it, I guess.
Shawmut. Okay.
Shawmut Center.
Okay.
Quickly changed to Fleet Center.
Yeah.
From 95 to 2005. And then it says from February 10 to March 13th, 2005, 30 different names?
Wow. 30 different names. How does that make sense?
I don't know.
30 different names?
And then 2005.
Today it will be Frank.
Yeah. The Jeff
That's what
arena.
It says. Go to Wikipedia. That's what it says.
Okay. Right. So, and then now TD.
TD Bank North okay. Garden, and now just TD Garden.
A lot more to get to on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. We're very excited about our next guest, a Vancouver Sports Talk legend, the godfather of Vancouver Sports Talk, if we're being real here. Dan Russell is going to join us on the program. His new memoir, Pleasant Good Evening, now available wherever you get your books. We'll talk to Dan about the memoir, about his memories of working in this market for as long as he did, what he thinks of the current plight of the industry, including how two guys like us are currently employed. All of the things that you'd ever want to hear from a Vancouver Sports Talk radio legend is coming up next. If you want to get any questions into Dan, text line 650-650. It is the Dunbar Lumber text message in basket. Dan Russell joining us next on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Tuesday. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650. Halford and Brough of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in hour two of the program. Dan Russell is going to join us in just a moment here. I need to tell you that hour two of this program is brought to you by North Star Metal Recycling. Vancouver's premier metal recycler pays the highest prices on scrap metal. North Star Metal Recycling. They recycle, you get paid. Visit them at 1170 Powell Street in Vancouver.
Are we going to start this segment off with Dan Russell saying, you're getting sued for using my music?
Yeah, I was wondering about that, but we'll see. We'll see. He is the host of the longest running 30-year run as Canada's longest running and most listened to radio show. We're very excited to have him on the program now, a Vancouver sports radio legend, Dan Russell, now on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Good morning, Dan. How are you?
I'm great, but and I'm not going to sue, but did you guys stand up for the Sports Talk National Anthem or no?
Yeah, of course, yep. Obviously.
Hats were off.
Yeah, hats were off. Yeah. It was...
Okay, the hats were off. All right.
So, Dan, I've had a number of surreal moments in Vancouver sports media. One of them was when I was in the press box at Rogers Arena, and I was just talking in the press box with Jim Robson, and I was like, what am I doing here? Like, this is a guy that I listened to when I was a kid. He was a legend. And I feel the same way about interviewing you, in that you were such a big part of my childhood and me becoming a fan of the Vancouver Canucks, me becoming a fan of the entire Vancouver sports scene, and now I'm interviewing you on the radio. And I wonder if in the last few days doing the media tour for this book that you've written, if you've come to appreciate how much of an impact you had.
Well, first of all, thank you. Second of all, even being in the same sentence as Jim Robson makes me kind of shudder a bit, because you and I have the same sort of experience. When I first met Jim Robson, I was at the Pacific Coliseum and I was a kid, and the Canucks were playing the Boston Bruins, and I wandered my way into the lower press box right beside it, actually. Couldn't get in it. But there was Jim getting ready for Hockey Night in Canada, and I'd say, hi, Mr. Robson, and he said hi, and he signed an autograph for me, and he had a thermos of tea. He had to assure me, for some reason, this 12-year-old kid, he says, that's tea in there. That's nothing else. He had his egg timer as well. I remember he would, and I said, what's that for? He said, well, I flip that over, and every time the sand runs out, I'm reminded to give the score. to the audience. So,
wow.
I mean, Jim Robson is my absolute hero. He is the Vin Scully of Vancouver. So if you put me anywhere near a sentence involving him, it's the highest compliment you can actually give me. I am overwhelmed this week. I had no idea. We put a tweet announcement out last week we teased it for a couple of days. And I said, I have a big announcement. And I knew it was pretty big, but I didn't know it was this big. And we just didn't plan on any media yet or any of the responses that we have gotten. I mean, we're blown away. And suddenly, for the first time really in me, because you guys know, when you're doing the show, the first thing that happens is when it ends, you're already planning the next one. You don't even think about the one you just did.
We go to sleep.
Coming and come.
We just go to bed.
Oh, is that what you
Yeah,
guys
we have a, okay. We have a 3-hour nap. Cool. I think you worked harder than us.
Seems maybe.
Like, yeah,
but I have
possible.
To congratulate you. No, guys, let me get this in. I got to congratulate you guys because I know how sharp you guys are. And I think in many ways you have reinvented this format perfectly for today. And I know how it ended before you found this home, and that felt kind of familiar, although it wasn't in the middle of one of my shows, but when some pinhead decision was executed. But you know what? I admire you guys a lot. I really do.
Well, the industry has changed a lot. Tell us about the book that you've written, and maybe take us through what the industry was like for you and how it changed as the years went by.
Wow. It changed, it seemed, dozens of times over. I mean, we were constantly having to reinvent ourselves, which is why I, you know, sort of said what I just did a moment ago. I mean, 1984, first of all, on the air, we did the show, and that was an era where there was no cell phones virtually. There was no email. There was no TSN. There was no Sportsnet. There was no fax machines. There was just, you know, people call. Finally, the cell phones came around, and it was such a novelty to get a call on a cell phone. I made the caller honk their horn, and this went on for a decade. You know, the next call's on the cell phone, and we'd start guessing a little bit what kind of vehicle they were. And then one person tries to up the other one, and one day we get a call from a guy in an 18-wheeler, big rig, and he honks his horn, and not to be outdone, one of the captains of BC Ferries on a run late at night, he honks the ferry horn for us as he gets on the show. And then a CN or CP rail conductor did the same with his train about a month later. So everything changed. Management, you know, that's a whole different ball of wax. I mean, the way that, you know, all that stuff changed over the years. But, you know, there was a great value for me being first and we definitely trailblazed and invented the genre in Vancouver. And when we started, there had been one other show in Canada, really in Quebec at the same time, plus John Short in Edmonton did a show rather successfully, I might say, for a lot of years, also called Sports Talk. But essentially in Vancouver and British Columbia, we were it.
We're speaking with Dan Russell. Yes, you do recognize that voice. I was reading a story about you and about how the idea for Sports Talk came about, and it was during the 1982 run to the Stanley Cup Finals for the Vancouver Canucks, and you were driving around in your car afterwards and being like, boy, I'd sure like to hear some talk about that, and you couldn't find any, which I find, like, it's hilarious right now. And for the youngins tuning in right now, it's like, I take it back to the day where I would wake up in the morning and be like, oh, I wonder if the Canucks won. And you like look to the newspaper, or you'd turn on the radio. Like it was it was so different. But that 1982 run, obviously Sports Talk wasn't on then. It started in 1984. But what are some of your fondest memories of the show, maybe as they relate to the teams, either going to the Stanley Cup Final or the Lions and the Grey Cup or whatever?
Yeah. So you're right. 1982, I'm 21 years old. The Canucks play in Chicago in the third round. And in game one, Jim Neal scores in double overtime. I go to my car. I'm so excited. I'm just a fan. I kind of was on the radio at CJOR in the sports department, but I'm pretty young and I'm a fan. And I go to the car and I start because I was just so excited. The Canucks won the first game of round three. They'd never been past round one before. And then 2 days later, Nilsson is lifting the white towel. And I do the same thing. And I'm going, I can't be the only one that is craving something after the game. So that was the impetus of it. And by the way, 40th anniversary of the Islanders winning was yesterday, 1982, at the Pacific Coliseum. And I was in the dressing room for that because I was in the media, but not on the road games. And Billy Smith, the New York Islanders legendary goalie, here I am 21 years old in the dressing room with a microphone. And they're just hooting and hollering. No champagne virtually because it was a Sunday and there was no booze allowed on Sundays and nobody thought to get champagne ahead of time. So they have beer and Billy Smith, they're all excited and they're throwing the beer around. And Billy looks at me because I was the closest one to him. He didn't know me from Adam. He says, hold this. I said, hold what? He said, hold the Stanley Cup. I said, what? He puts the cup in my midsection. I'm hugging the cup while he's filling beer onto the top of the mug. So, I mean, it was like, how surreal can you get? And then you talk about the greatest moments. I mean, the Vancouver Canucks' greatest moment, as everybody, I think, would agree, was the June of 1994. Mm. And that was where we peaked. That was our peak time. Our show was with the Canucks, home and away. And it's probably the part of the book that brings a tear to my eye because I write about after game seven, which we went 7 hours from Manhattan, I got out at 8 a.m, 5 a.m. Pacific, and it's bright, sunshiny June day, and the newspaper hawkers are, extra, Rangers win the cup, Rangers win. And I go, holy smokes, it's finally hit me. The Canucks did not win the cup. I get on the, we went right to the Grand Hyatt, that's where we were staying. We grabbed our luggage, we got a plane to Toronto. I got on the second flight, the Air Canada flight. They put the news on in the cabin. That's the first time I saw the riot, and I had reported on it for hours on end. I hadn't even seen a lick of it. But anyway, that
you didn't see it on social media?
Not quite. No, I didn't bring my cell phone with me. But anyway, the part of the book that brought a tear as I was writing it was, I'm at the back of the plane. We'd done all this coverage, home and away. It was a marathon and a half. And we really felt we had provided something to a BC audience. And going back to your 1982 comment, you know, there was nothing there. And here we were the next time they went to the final. And we served the British Columbia sports fans with a gathering spot, game nights, off nights. It was so rewarding that I felt like, wow, this was what I was kind of meant to do in broadcasting. Anyway, it really brings back great memories that our show, and people still talk about it to me all the time, that our show, that they listened during that great run.
I'm really glad that you brought up that phrase, like a meeting point for British Columbians, because I don't know if you've seen the Mike and Mad Dog 30 for 30 with Mike Francesca and talking about the history that they had. But one of the great lines from the documentary is they didn't just talk about sports. They talked about sports, how New Yorkers talked about sports. And that's what made them so popular and really changed the game locally. You know, when you go back and look at it, how important was you not just to be a voice for sports and a voice on the radio, but within this particular market and this particular province, it's very unique. And you have to kind of be here and live it to experience it. But to be able to talk to Vancouverites and British Columbians the way that they talk about the Canucks and other sports, how important was that to you?
You know, you guys are bringing up something I haven't thought that much about. I think you're right. I think that's a good point. And, you know, because I'm so close to it and I grew up in Vancouver and I, you know, I was the perfect age when the Canucks came in the NHL. I was 3 days shy of my 10th birthday. So you imagine, you're 10 years old. I just got introduced to hockey through Bob Orr on Hockey Night in Canada 2 years earlier. And now the Canucks are in the NHL. So why I'm saying that is that I can speak to the entire history of the franchise. I've been alive for all of it. I was at their very first victory, October 11th, 1970. So I know what you're saying. But the other side of that, and I take that, and I thank you for actually telling me that because I never really gave that enough thought. What I do think, though, is that, and maybe people don't really know this, or it's lost on them, and that's okay because it means I was doing my job, and that's this. I believe I was a broadcaster who happened to be doing a sports show, not a sports fan who just happened to be on the radio. My skill is broadcasting. I studied it. I had idols like Jim Robson, like Larry King, like Vin Scully. I mean, I went to, you know, their universities, if you will. I everything they did that I could hear, I wanted to know what made them great. And I listened to a lot of radio as a kid. And not just sports, Pat Burns, Jack Webster, Terry Moore, all the people at CJOR, at CKNW, Jack Cullen at night. I mean, I was a radio nerd or junkie. If you'd indulge me one story, in the early 70s, KFI Los Angeles, which is 570 on the AM dial, which used to come in at night pretty well until Sea Isle took the 650 signal over, and it kind of blocked that at night. But they were the voice of the LA Kings. But they were also the voice of the LA Lakers. And the Lakers took priority, which meant when they both played on the same night, the Kings were on tape delay. So a few Fridays, I remember for sure, the Canucks hosting the Kings, and I would listen to the game on CKNW, and then wait anxiously for 11 o'clock to hear the entire game once again on KFI Los Angeles. True story.
So what makes a good broadcaster?
I think if we start with the area of talk show hosts, especially, I think the best broadcasters are the best listeners. I think the best broadcasters are the most curious. I like to think that my interviews were a strength, maybe my best strength. I believe I could. I mean, I did over 25,000 interviews. I was remarking yesterday that if you took every seat at Rogers Arena and I sat at every one of them, we wouldn't be at 25,000. So, I mean, I got more practice doing interviews than anybody. But Larry King, that was one of my idols. He asked great, short, tight questions, listened to the response, and reacted after the person he was speaking with, the interview subject, completed. There's a lot of people. I remember Tony Gallagher once told me, and he was going up against me on CKWX. They'd hired him to take my old slot in the building that you're sitting in right now, guys. I went over to CFMI after spending 1 year at CKWX, and they hired Tony to go head-to-head with me. And he comes up to me at the press box a couple months in, and Tony's a nice guy. He goes, Ross, I don't know how you do it, but, you know, I have a list of questions. And if I'm interviewing Mike Keenan and he says that he murdered three people on the way to the studio, I would say, well, but what about your power play? He was telling me that he wasn't listening because he was just so uptight about the whole thing. And Tony, of course, had a great career and now in the Hall of Fame and such. But just that story, to answer your question, I believe that that was my skill, and as a broadcaster, the best broadcasters to me are the best listeners.
So, Halford, if you were listening, short, tight questions.
I missed that part.
Yeah,
sorry.
He wasn't listening. Yeah, he was on Twitter. So sorry about that, Dan. So the way we connect with the listeners is through the text inbox, which is different than the way you connected with the listeners. And as I go into the Dunbar Lumber text line, there are approximately 600 questions about the pauser and your relationship with the pauser. Tell us first, for the people, maybe some of the younger listeners that aren't familiar with the pauser, who was the pauser? Why did he get the nickname the pauser? And what are some of your memories of the pauser?
The pauser's actual name, which most people did not know, was Paul LaFleur, who sadly passed away a handful of years ago, about age 56, I believe. One day, I'm on CJOR. I can't quite remember. I think it was CJOR. I just take a random call, and this guy, he had this very unique voice. But it wasn't so much his unique voice. It was his pacing. So he and he was highly opinionated, and he thought he knew more about the Canucks than any management figure, which was a great and funny shtick to have, although it was not a shtick for him, but it sure was with me. And I've said many times that, you know, I like to think that I brought out the best in him, but he probably brought out the best in me. He was menacing, but he had a sense of humor as well. And I would promo. I mean, who promos? Oh, the Pauser's on the line. And I'm like, I'll say he's, by the way, you know, Pauser's on hold. Our phone lines were jammed in those days. We'll get to him in a few minutes. And I'd wait 15 minutes knowing for sure people would keep listening because you never knew how he was going to conduct himself on the air. But he, where he was brilliant, more, and going back to your previous question, he had a skill, I don't know if he knew it, that a lot of broadcasters do not have, and that was his pacing. He could talk a mile a minute and go, 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 and then suddenly he would get to the punchline, and he would slow it down. He was kind of like Paul Harvey in the rest of the story. But and so he did that. On the first time he called, I said, will you speed it up, please? You're just doing a lot of pausing, and I can't figure out why you're doing that. And then he did it again and again. I said, you're nothing but a pauser. And for some reason, that nickname stuck.
Dan, did you have any good run-ins with the Vancouver Canucks over the years, maybe management or coaches or players? I feel
really?
Like you might have. Yeah, that is a question that you that set them up, knock them down.
Well, you know, the relationship I had with Brian Burke is, and it weaves throughout the book, as you might well imagine. We essentially had ourselves about three chapters, a really good chapter in our relationship, a really bad one, and then something that met in the middle. We had some fun years. We poked jabs at each other. In the early years, he tried to get a little too close sometimes to influencing me, but I, you know, we would jab at each other. I remember one day telling him, why don't you let me worry about my first place radio show and you worry about your last place hockey team? That kind of shut him up, at least for a couple minutes. There is lots there. You have to read it to get the thing in context because our relationship did go sour at a time. Now, it was thanks to him resuscitated, and I do appreciate that. But I have to lay it all out in the book. I did, and I think some people are going to be pretty surprised as to how turbulent that was and how ugly it got off the air. But, you know, but mostly the Canucks were really respectful of our show, thankful for our show. They, you know, they never had a form before. Burke was the very first regular guest on our show. And I, in those days, guys, there were, I mean, I know you guys have regular guests and all the shows now have regular guests. Nobody had a regular guest back then. And then he led me the first night he was on, I remarked that, you know, this is wonderful that you're on. I'd love to have you on more often. He says, I'll come on every week. And I didn't know he knew that he was actually serious, but he never missed 12 months a year. And every Wednesday, the weekly Canucks update with Brian Burke. People called it appointment radio, and it really was. You didn't want to miss, because in those days, guys, management, they didn't go on the radio, but if they did, they weren't going to say boo. They were very vanilla, or not Berkey. He would say stuff. And, I mean, he threatened to fight Doug Lidster, one of his own players on our show, once, you know, over a contract. You know, so there was stuff that went on that made national headlines. But, you know, he was really, really a big part. He didn't invent our show, but he took it to a new level. That was absolutely no question about it.
Dan, this has been wonderful and remarkable, and it's great to have you on the program previewing everything that's coming with the book. Our text message in basket is filled, and there's a lot of people that are really enjoying this walk down memory lane, and they're also saying that it's great to hear you back on the airwaves. It is great to hear you back on these airwaves. I want to wish you the best of luck with everything moving forward with the book. We're going to put it up on our social media channels, and we'll shout it out as well. But from both of us, thank you for the kind words earlier in the call. We really appreciate those. Thank you for everything that you did that allowed us to have these kind of jobs where we're at in our careers. And thanks for doing this today. This was a lot of fun.
Wow. You guys are so nice. And I have a new website, DanRussellSportsTalk.com. There's a lot of old audio there. And this weekend in the Sun and Province, they're starting a five-part series. They're running excerpts from the book starting in the Saturday Vancouver Sun. So thank you for indulging me to get that out there. But guys, keep on keeping on. It's important. You know the market. We could go on about that sometime if you want. It's so important that there is shows like yours still out there. We all know that if left to the devices of Toronto management, I want to throw out there mostly, if left to their devices, there wouldn't be shows like yours necessarily. So keep on going on, guys. And thanks very much for having me. This was my last sports talk station, you know, that 650. So there you go.
Well, yeah, the newbie says hi, Dan.
Yes, and also Greg says hello.
Oh, yes, newbie. I thought he was laddie with you guys, but I worked with him, and he was definitely newbie to me.
I didn't know his name was Greg. Thanks, Dan. Thanks, Dan. That was a true pleasure.
Thanks, Dan.
Have a great day, guys. Thank you for having me.
You too. Thanks. That's Dan Russell, Vancouver Sports Talk radio legend here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. We got a lot more to get to in the final hour of the program. Thomas Drance is going to join us. We'll circle back on some of the Canucks conversations from earlier. And it's what we learn in the 8 o'clock hour as well. Get yours in now. What did you learn over the last 24 hours in sports? Let us know. It's the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.